Tracy and Deborah both offered us courageous looks into the lives of students and professors in higher education, as well as balancing work and parenting with young children at home, which I can also personally relate to with my own 18-month-old home with me. Our final guest brings a whole different perspective. Deanna Coons was the 2019 Teacher of the Year at Carroll Middle School. I'd love to give a shout out to my dear friend John Lehman for introducing me to her. I hung up from my first phone call with her and immediately turned to my husband and said, "What a fantastic human." She has worked endlessly throughout this crisis to support her sixth grade students, other educators who needed help transitioning to remote learning, and her own five children who are now home with her. Her open heart and devotion to her students is a stellar example of the ways educators are going above and beyond to support those old enough to understand what's going on, but too young to have been prepared for this transition. So welcome, Deanna. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Stephanie.
How are you feeling this evening? How are things going for you?
Everything's going really well. Today is like a Friday for students, so it's still a Thursday for me, but I'm ready to have some development and stuff like that with my coworkers tomorrow.
So you teach at Carroll Middle School, right?
I do.
Can you share with our listeners a little bit about your work at Carroll Middle School, both in and out of the classroom?
Absolutely. I'm very involved in Carroll Middle School. I've been part of a lot of committees. I used to coach volleyball for many years, but after my son joined the sixth grade at Carroll Middle, I promised my family that I would step down from that position. So currently I do a lot of other extracurricular activities that include a new committee called Sources of Strength, which essentially is a group of adults that join with a group of students at Carroll Middle. And we go through training, a two-day training, and it's really about turning suicidal thoughts and tragedy in our lives into something more with hope. And it kind of focuses on, we all have strengths, and when we play into those strengths, then we can move on with our life in a positive way. I'm also part of the Positive Behavior Committee, which on the same lines really looks and evaluates how we can add some positivity within our building. During the week, I also participate with students in creating a newspaper where we publish on the bulletin board for students to know what's going on in the building, and it kind of highlights things that are coming up to get more interaction with the students. I also am the sponsor for our yearbook and co-sponsor for the yearbook, and I am also the sponsor for our student council at Carroll Middle School.
So you are doing a lot beyond just teaching in the classroom.
That is correct. That's my passion.
Yes. Thank you for all of that work that you're doing. That's all so important. And I can imagine, especially the work that you were doing with Source for Strength. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
I mean, that must be absolutely vital right now, especially for middle schoolers.
It really is. It's definitely a new outlook and way of looking at things, and it's definitely brought our school together.
I can imagine. So when did you first hear about COVID-19, and what were your initial thoughts about it when you heard about it?
Honestly, I heard a little bit of a buzz maybe about 2 weeks prior to that Friday, March 13th date, where it was our last day at Carroll Middle for, well, it would be the end of the year. So I had a coworker that was meeting with me during prep, and we were planning, and he asked me my thoughts on coronavirus. And I'm like, honestly, I haven't been really following the news lately. I said, I feel comfortable being here at school. So I guess it was just more of a little conversation that kind of got everything started. And then it was about a week after that we had a parent decide to, not one of my parents, but one of the parents on the other team that decided to pull their children out of the school and homeschool because of the virus. And I thought, well, maybe this is more serious than what I realize. And it was about a week after that I started to realize that there are schools that were close to us. I'm still hours away, but still closer to us in the United States that were having positive cases pop up. And they were being instructed to close their doors for 14 days. And that school happened to be closed for up until their spring break. And then that spring break was going to give them an extra week. And then all of a sudden, it felt like days later, the people were saying that it needed to be 28 days. And if anyone within that amount of time tested positive, then their 28 days would start over. And at that point, my coworker and I thought, oh, this is really going to happen. And I would say it was in the middle of the week that probably about March 11th, 12th range, where we were told we were supposed to have a guest speaker come in and we were supposed to have a training on that particular day, a 2-hour delay that was planned. And it quickly turned into, we need to stop everything we're doing. We need to be prepared in case this is going to happen to us. So all staff members, kindergarten through 12th grade, were invited to participate in this remote learning training for the 2-hour delay. And we were taught how to use Google Meet. We were taught how to use video applications such as Loom. And we then had 2 hours to kind of play around with our curriculum and play around with these tools and figure out how we were going to teach it to our students. This was on a Wednesday, how we were going to teach it to the students that Thursday and Friday in case our school had to go remote that following week. So at that point, I kind of thought, oh, this is definitely going to be impacting us. And my coworkers and I kind of started gathering information with our fourth quarter to see what it would look like if we had to go remote. And so we spent a couple nights at school till about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the evening, preparing the hard copy of things, not only to organize ourselves in a binder, but to organize for those that might not have internet.
What a wild journey to have gone through. And I can only imagine what it was like those few nights that you were pulling late nights at the school, trying to figure out essentially an entirely new way to teach your students in a matter of days. It's incredible.
Yeah, honestly, it was a couple evenings that seemed very surreal thinking back at them. There were definitely feelings going all over the place. One coworker started to even tear up a little bit, trying to comprehend the amount of work that we had to put together in such a short amount of time.
And somehow you did. And somehow you got through it.
We took a deep breath. We gave each other hugs and we said we were in it together. And we took a deep breath and we started dividing everything up. And that's how we conquered it in that short amount of time.
So you've shared with me some really lovely and, in my opinion, very moving things that you've been doing outside of class time to support your students. Would you mind sharing some of that?
Yes, absolutely. I have noticed over the last 7 weeks that I had students that were starting to appear that they were going through some mental changes. So some of the things I noticed was they were not changing out of their pajamas, or they started turning off their cameras so that we couldn't see them. And we noticed that the amount of talking was kind of declining. And so I started to feel that maybe they were forgetting that it was me on the other side of the camera. So what I went ahead and I started to do is I started putting a little goodie bag together for my students. And on the goodie bag, on the outside, I took a marker and I wrote, "Finish strong, love Mrs. Coons." And on the inside, I put some special little treats, pre-packaged candy, a glow stick, tell them to keep the light going and keep their faith. And then I also put in a little bit of, it was either a ball or a rubber duck, depending on which bag that they got. And what that represented was during the school year, we always took brain breaks. I had every student for 2 rotations in a row. And so we took brain breaks and they were missing those. And so I sent the rubber duck or the ball so that here in the next week or two, we can go ahead and do some brain breaks with those items that I put in their goodie bags. And I also put treats because every once in a while when I notice that they're getting down at school, because I really like the energy and the high participation in my class, I will throw out candy. And so I put a little bit of candy in there to help them finish strong. So what then I started to do is ask permission from the parents. Since it was past the May 1st, where the governor was starting to let us open up some things, I reached out to the parents asking them permission if they felt comfortable with me dropping off the goodie bags and then standing 6 foot or more away from their child and have a conversation with them and ask how everything was going and ask them if there was anything I could do to help them to succeed for the remainder of the school year. And it was just phenomenal, the response that I got from these parents. And up to date right now, I've been able to see 49 out of the 89 students that I have on a daily basis. And so I look forward to seeing the final 40 in the next week or two.
So on top of teaching your classes, you made personal visits to almost 50 students.
Absolutely. It was very important to me for the students to realize that I'm still human, I'm still Mrs. Coons, I'm still on the other side of that computer, and I'm still there if they need me. And it's really hard to do that on a computer. So I showed up in human form, and I was right there able to have conversations. It was very powerful.
How did your students respond to this?
It was honestly so neat. I got goosebumps at every stop that I took, and their smiles were worth every penny and every minute of my time. And their parents joined them outside, most of them, and they just came out. They had like a family reunion with their teacher, and it was just a really fun experience to watch them just lighten up when they got to see me. It was really fun.
I know that we didn't talk about this beforehand, but one question that comes to my mind as we're talking about this, before COVID-19, how common was it for you to interact with your students outside of school?
Oh, it was pretty common in the sense that a lot of my students are involved in either extracurricular activity or in the regards to sports, or they were involved in extracurricular activities in terms of their clubs that they would be involved in. So there were quite a few times that I would take my own children, I have 5 kids, and I would take my own children to their events. And so I know that my goal is always to attend at least one football game, one volleyball game, one basketball game, one wrestling match. And when I get to do that, the kids that are participating get to see me, and they get to see me with my children. So they see me as a mom, but also as an encouraging teacher.
But all of that's still at the school. How often have there ever been times where you've actually seen your kids in their home environments?
No, not very often. Maybe when I did elementary school a little bit more, but now that I've been at the middle school, it does not happen very often that I would do home visits.
I've been asking a lot in this episode of my other guests what the silver linings of this are. And to me, that seems like it might be one of them. Just an opportunity to get to know your students in a new way.
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%.
And what about the other educators that you're connected to? How has the rest of the education community responded? And is there anything that you've done or had other educators do for you to support each other?
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, we take our Fridays, they're office hours, but they're also an opportunity for us to have professional development and to reach out to our fellow colleagues and collaborate. A lot of times on Fridays, we get to ask, you know, what are your opinions on things that are happening and what are you trying and what's working for you and what's not working for you, and have your students said anything that could help us plan as we finish the year. And it's been a very powerful time for us to have that. I've also had the opportunity, I have a lot of friends that are teachers because, you know, when I went through Ball State, we met a lot of educators because I was in the education program. And I've had some educator friends that they were telling me that they seem to be like 1 or 2 weeks behind us in the sense of tools and resources to use. And so I've had a couple of friends who reached out to me asking, you know, what are you using? What are you finding is being helpful? What are you liking and not liking about this tool? And I've actually gotten on Google Meets or Zooms with them, and I actually present my screen and show them step by step how to do some things. And then they've been able to then in return go and use it with their students and bridge that gap, because I'm very fortunate to be in a school district that uses the online platform in the sense that my students see me face to face on the computer every single day. And so that's why we call that remote learning instead of e-learning, where we just give them the assignments and then they don't see us and interact with us. So I definitely feel I've been able to reach out to other educators and help them with some tools that I'm using. And then in return, I get to hear what they're using for me to go and try.
That's wonderful. I mean, how often do you hear about a group of people coming together with such teamwork to coordinate such a massive effort that's affecting so many people? The entire education community has really just been truly, in my opinion, heroes of this crisis.
Absolutely. I would 100% agree. They're doing what they feel is the best for students.
And it shows. Absolutely. Now, you're more than just a teacher. You're also a mother of 5 kids. How old are your kids?
I have 5 kids. And the first, my oldest, is a boy. His name is Brandon, and he's a 6th grader, and he will be turning 12 here in the next couple months. Or not couple months. I'm sorry. I should look at my calendar the next couple of days.
And happy birthday to him.
Oh, yes, I will make sure he knows that. My second son is Tyler, and he is 10, and he's a 4th grader. My third son, Landon, is 9, and he is a 3rd grader. And then my final son, my 4th son, is 7, and he is a 1st grader. And finally, I have a little girl. Her name is Brianna, and she is finishing her last year of preschool.
That is an impressive age range to be managing having all 5 kids home. How has it been having your children home and transitioning to remote learning for them? Have you been able to find some sort of balance between teaching your students and parenting and teaching your children?
First of all, I definitely feel that most teachers and educators that have children at home of their own can relate that it's definitely not easy. It's definitely a balancing act. I am one of the fortunate ones that my husband works second shift, so he has been able to keep the kids on task and kind of getting their things done while I'm downstairs teaching. They're upstairs. I kind of help by creating a schedule and taping it above their desk so that they know what they need to get done each day. And I try the best that I can in between classes to check in on them and send them like to-do lists of what they need to finish. And I try to show them the schedule and kind of show them the routine. We did have to make a transition a little bit about a week ago when my oldest son was saying that the youngest son was just being a little too loud upstairs and it was distracting him. So I felt that maybe it was time for me to bring him down next to me. So I set up a little desk area and a little area for all his materials within an arm reach from my little homemade classroom. And so that's been helping a lot for him. We have to do a little balancing act with, okay, I'm talking to my students the same time your teacher's trying to talk to you. So because I'm getting obviously paid to teach and he's getting not paid, but still he needs to finish his career with first grade, I tell him it's his career, he has to put his little earbuds in. And this way my students aren't distracted with what the teacher's saying. And they're pretty understandable and flexible when it comes to they're going to hear my first grader every once in a while answering a question. They're like, oh, is that your son? Tell Tanner I said hi. So they understand that I am trying to play both roles at the same time.
Normally, students don't get a real look like that into what their teachers' home lives are. We already talked about it a little bit, but do you feel that remote education has changed not just your ability to look into your students' lives, but their ability to look into yours?
Absolutely. I do feel that there's some good and bad with this whole remote learning. We always try to make the best of our situations, but I definitely feel that the remote learning is going to naturally change the relationship with you and your students, because you're going to be able to see their bedrooms, or you're going to be able to see their living rooms, or you're going to be able to see their animals, or you're going to see their siblings or even their parents in the background, and vice versa. They're going to see my decorations in the background. They're going to see, you don't get to see the picture, but I have a picture behind me that is a faith-based quote, and they see that and they're like, oh, Mrs. Coons, I see that. This is what's behind you. And it's hard because you have to have that fine line of faith and education in a public school. So I don't get to share that with them. And I'm not trying to share with them that I am Catholic, but they now know that because they constantly see that picture in my background. And I definitely think that they see a different side of me because my children are right there with me. It's like I'm bringing my kids to school every day where I don't get to do that in class. So that's kind of neat to be able to get to know them on a whole different level. But I think it's also kind of harder because, like I mentioned with the goodie bags, I do feel that the longer that you're on remote learning, the longer or easier it is for them to feel that you're not human and you're just talking through a computer, if that makes any sense. I just feel that they lose that relationship when it's not in person.
Absolutely. That makes perfect sense to me. Given the ages of your own kids and the fact that you do teach such a transitional age, I feel like you have some unique perspective on how this crisis has impacted children that are old enough to understand what's happening. The previous guests that we've had on this episode have their own kids, but their kids are much younger. And we had a student on that that is a university student and a university professor. So it's much younger and much older. And this age group is different than that because they're still so young, but they're old enough to understand. How have you seen this affecting the age group that you work with?
There are a select few that this has been great for. The kids that struggle making friends, the kids that feel they stand out in the classroom, those select few, this has been a great transition for. They still get to do their education. They still get to interact with the teacher. They still get to interact with peers, but at a whole different level, to a level where they're comfortable. They're in their home where they're safe. They don't have to feel that people are judging them by the way they look or the way they talk or the way that they're quiet in the classroom. So in that sense, we do have that small group, and it's not a very large group, but there are a couple kids that have told me, Mrs. Coons, this by far is the best way of learning for me. But majority of the students have opposite effects on this, and they're telling me that it's been a hard transition. And what they're telling me is that the more that they're separated from their friends, the more lonely they're feeling. They're struggling with the motivation to keep their grades up. Some of the straight A kids, they're noticing that they're getting more B's, and that's bothering them, but yet they don't feel that they have the motivation to keep working to get that A. They're also desiring conversations with people outside their house. They feel like they are enjoying their time with their family, and they're voicing that they're enjoying that they're getting to bond with their family more, but there's this desire to want more and to want a connection with someone that's not family. And I definitely feel that that social aspect is missing to a large degree. And so for this particular age group where socializing is so important, I think it's impacting them in not necessarily a positive way.
I can absolutely see that and can even relate to that experience. That's I think that a lot of us are going through that, but you're right. That is the age at which people start to develop that part of themselves. And I could see it affecting them a lot.
It truly is. And to hear some of the students who you would least expect say, Mrs. Coons, I want everything to go back to normal. I don't want to take school for granted anymore. I just want to go back. I thought this would be easier, but it's not. I want to go back to school. I want to see my teachers. I want to see my friends, but I want to see them in person.
That's both heartbreaking and also
touching.
Yeah. Like, I hope that when this does eventually pass, that those kids are able to hold on to that and remember how important it is to really appreciate the things that we have, especially the things that we have that maybe frustrate us a lot of the time.
Totally agree.
I've asked this question of both of our previous guests and have loved hearing the variety of answers that people have to share. So what are your silver linings in the midst of all of this?
You know, there are so many blessings that we should all be able to see from this. I think first and foremost, the increased family time. We live in a world that is so busy. Everyone's going here or there and needs to be here or there in a short amount of time. And everyone's just move. So I think to be given that time that we so often say we don't have enough of, it's definitely a silver lining here. It's not just you that are slowing down, but everyone around you has been forced to slow down. With that being said, I've noticed an increase in neighbors coming out and talking to neighbors. And it was so often when you would go take a bike ride or take a walk, you would see a neighbor here or there. But now, the last 6 weeks, there are neighbors filling the streets, filling their driveways, saying hi, waving to your neighbor. And it's just an awesome feeling to have this connectedness with the people that live around you. So I definitely think that's been a silver lining. I think also from my own family, we are churchgoers. We go each Sunday. But to build the church within the home and to turn your home into that sanctuary or that altar, however you practice it, has definitely been an awesome experience. And I just think even sometimes that wake up call of saying, you can't take back the things that have happened. So I think the silver lining to me would be, what have I learned from this? And what blessings have I gotten from this? And how am I going to make sure that I don't go back to taking things for granted and remember that these things are important to me? I have everything I need and want right under my roof. And I just need to make sure that I give that time for those things.
Before we wrap up for the evening, do you have any advice for our listeners who may be parents with kids at home or students themselves or other educators?
I just want all of us to remember that we're all in this together. Together, we all care about your child. Together, we all want what's best. And sometimes it's not educationally based. Sometimes it's the understanding that a child needs more than academics at that moment. And I definitely want to remind us all to try to refrain from judging one educator and comparing one educator to another, because we each have our own beliefs of what we feel is best for our students. And sometimes what we feel is best is different than what another educator might feel is best. And I think if we take that moment to understand that our educators truly care for the students, I think we can all take that time to realize that there's things more important out there than saying one educator is better than the next.
That absolutely makes sense. And I'm so glad that you said that. Thank you so much for taking some time. I know that your life is very full right now. And the fact that you were willing to give me the time for this interview really means a lot to both me and my listeners.
Well, thank you for having me.
Have a great evening.
You too. Thank you.
We're so grateful to all three of our guests today. They all, I feel, gave a really lovely variety of perspectives on what has been going on with education in this strange time of COVID. But they're just three stories. For each of those three stories, there's three dozen more and three dozen more beyond that. And every single one of our educators and students who has been affected by this crisis have been going above and beyond. As the 2020 school year draws to a close, we wanted to just take this moment and say thank you and congratulations to all of the students that are finishing school years, to all of the teachers that are wrapping up lesson plans, to all of the administrators that have been working against unbelievable challenges to adapt rapidly and continue supporting our students and their families. From all of us at Women Are Fort Wayne, thank you to everybody in our education community.
Women Are Fort Wayne is sponsored by the Community Foundation of Greater Fort Wayne. For nearly 100 years, the Community Foundation of Greater Fort Wayne has connected people and resources to build a more vibrant community. Three ways the Community Foundation does this is through helping people make their charitable giving more impactful, connecting funding to effective nonprofits through grant making, and by providing leadership to address community needs and improve quality of life. To learn more, visit cfgfw.org today. So I'm just gonna go, you're great.
No, you're great.
No,
you're great.
Many of you are already familiar with Alicia Pyle of Pyle Style Events. I've featured her music on here a few times already, most recently at the end of the episode with Crystal Van Wallstrom discussing Electric Works. For those of you who don't know Alicia and don't follow her on social media, she has been seriously showing up for the Fort Wayne music community during the COVID crisis. Back in March, she launched a Facebook fundraiser for her birthday to benefit local freelance musicians whose livelihood depends on playing live shows. She's been promoting it for over 2 months now and has raised $11,400 of the $15,000 goal. Every penny of that has gone straight to musicians that are out of work, and she has put in many hours and much passion to supporting those in need. She'll be on our live stream in a couple of weeks to talk more about the fundraiser and her efforts. But in the meantime, I would encourage every one of you to stop what you're doing and go over to Facebook. Search for Fort Wayne Freelance Musician Fundraiser SOS. We'll also have a link in our show notes. Do you want to give a shout out to somebody that has gone above and beyond to help you cope with the COVID crisis? Our next episode is going to focus on mental health impact of COVID-19, and we want to hear about the women that have shown up for you in these challenging times. If you have a story of somebody helping you cope with your quarantine, there are a few different ways to give a shout out. You can call our voicemail at 260-355-5734. That's a Google Voice number that goes straight to voicemail, so call anytime. You won't wake anybody up, I promise. You can also email us at womenarefortwayne@gmail.com or shoot us a direct message on Facebook or Instagram. Have you enjoyed our content? Would you like us to make more? We've just launched our Patreon and would be super grateful if you hopped over to www.patreon.com/womenarefortwayne and showed us some love. We're offering 3 tiers of membership for very small amounts each month. Each tier comes with new ways to engage with the Women Are Fort Wayne community and our mission to build bridges, break silos, share stories, and promote empathy. The money we make off of our Patreon will go straight to creating more and better content, starting with the launch of our weekly live stream so that we can share more of what's going on in various pockets of the Fort Wayne community. Want to learn more? Once again, head on over to www.patreon.com, that's patreon.com/womenarefortwayne. This week, we're featuring a song by Sarah Smith, also known as Sundog Sarah. Sarah makes lo-fi electronic pop music and is currently holed up in downtown Fort Wayne, Indiana. The song is called Close to Home, which naturally jumped out at me during these times when we're all a bit closer to home than we may prefer. The lyrics tell the story of an on-and-off relationship, the struggle to find the balance between freedom and stability, and finding comfort in a big, unfamiliar world as we grow older. Sarah recently released a few new pieces of music on a YouTube channel called From Here to There, the brainchild of C. Ray Harvey, where Fort Wayne-based musicians make and share music during the quarantine. I'll have links to her 2 videos in the show notes. You can find Sarah's music on Bandcamp and SoundCloud, and you can follow her on Instagram at SundogSarah. We hope that all of you are staying healthy, physically and mentally, during these challenging times. Please feel free to reach out to us directly if you're feeling isolated and alone. We're all in this together. Take care and be well. Thank you.
Women Are Fort Wayne is a production of Monstrous Regiment Media and distributed by WBOI in Fort Wayne, Indiana. This episode was written and produced by Stephanie Gottesman and Tracy Henning Kohlberg, and edited by Adam Blackburn. Our episodes are recorded at Silver Birch Studio, with an extra thank you to sound engineer Steve Tyler and assistant engineer Harrison Tyler. We appreciate you subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. You can also visit us at womenr.us or follow us on Facebook and Instagram. New episodes are released every 2 weeks. You can check out other content from WBOI on Facebook. Until next time, thanks for listening. From WBOI Fort Wayne.